Chapter 16, The Direction of the Execution. An examination of this final stage of volitional action will reveal the fundamental error generally committed in the use of the will, an error based upon a mistaken conception of its nature and way of functioning. This error consists in attempting to act by imposing the power of the will on the organs of action. Instead, the true and natural function of the will at this stage is to direct the execution, to put into operation the necessary and appropriate means for reaching the proposed objective. It does so by taking command of and directing the various psychological functions. This will appear more clearly if we examine in detail the analogy between the activity of willing and that of driving a car. The direct effort of will resembles that made by a driver trying to propel his car forward by pushing it from behind with muscle power. Such behaviour is manifestly observed, and yet equally misguided is the effort to use the will for direct action rather than for action through the other psychological functions. Let us examine what the driver of a car actually does. He begins by doing what corresponds to the previously described stages. First, he chooses where he wishes to go, then he decides to go there, and when to start. This leads to a study of the route and the planning of the journey. Now comes the stage of the direction of the execution. It is divided into two parts. The first is the servicing of the car, which means filling it with gas and water, checking oil and tire pressure, and so forth. All this corresponds to the preparatory work of psychosynthesis, the development and cultivation of the various psychological functions and the will function of the self. The car is now ready to start. The driver settles himself comfortably in his seat, starts the engine, and operates the appropriate controls for putting the car in motion in the chosen direction. During the trip, the driver steers so as to avoid obstacles, judges when it's possible and safe to pass other vehicles, and decides which road to take at intersections. When he was learning to drive, these operations demanded much conscious attention and effort on his part. But as he became more proficient at them, he performed the mechanics of driving with less and less conscious intervention. This subconscious control is usually described as an automatic process, but this is a misleading term if the term automatic is taken to mean something rigid and fixed. On the contrary, in this case, we have intelligent action continuously being modified in accordance with information received by sight, hearing, and kinesthetic data. A fully conscious action can be resumed at any moment, at will, if needed. The above series of actions corresponds to setting the various psychological functions in motion and directing their operation. Here also there occurs a gradual shifting from a conscious focusing on the full attention on the task to an increasing delegation of responsibility to the unconscious without the direct intervention of the conscious I. This process is apparent in the work of acquiring some such technical accomplishment as learning to play a musical instrument. At first, full attention and conscious direction of the execution are demanded. Then little by little there comes the formation of what might be called the mechanisms of action, i.e. new neuromuscular patterns. The pianist, for example, now reaches the point at which he no longer needs to pay conscious attention to the mechanics of execution, that is, to directing his fingers to the desired places. He can now give his whole conscious attention to the quality of the execution, to the expression of the emotional, aesthetic content of the music that he is performing. Let us briefly examine how, through the will, we can use the various psychological functions to reach the goals we have chosen. The methods of doing so vary greatly for each function according to its specific characteristics. Let us consider, first of all, the use of sensations, of sensory perceptions. Apart from the fact that the limitations inherent in the physical organs of sense permit the perception of only a small part of impressions and vibrations coming from the external world, our use of these organs is habitually very imperfect and partial. If a sensory perception is to become truly conscious, i.e. a perceived, it must remain in the field of consciousness long enough to be assimilated by the conscious I. But this field is often cluttered with other psychological contents, sensations of other kinds, emotions, thoughts, etc. Moreover, the sensory perceptions immediately induce emotional reactions, either positive or negative, which often impede accurate perception and sometimes even misrepresent the object of perception. The psychology of evidence gives ample proof of this fact. It frequently happens that the depositions of witnesses concerning a given event are either incomplete or faulty, or both. This occurs even when the deposition is made in good faith and with no conscious attempt to falsify. It is a serious matter which can have grave consequences, such as the conviction of innocent people. When, therefore, an accurate and objective examination based on precise observation is required, the will must intervene in order to direct, regulate, and use the sensory functions to best advantage. To do this, it must keep consciousness concentrated on the task of receiving, assimilating, and integrating the messages brought in by the senses. Moreover, it must refuse to acknowledge, for as long as may be necessary, the other sensory impressions, emotions, and mental activities that tend to interfere with the ongoing chosen task. This means the training of the power of observation, by means of observation exercises, such as those described in psychosynthesis. As we have seen in the story of Agassiz and the fish, major scientists, and especially the naturalists among them, have possessed and further developed by practice this power of observation as promoted and sustained by the will. The ways in which the will can make use of emotion and feeling as means of realizing its purposes are more complex. First of all, attention and concentration, which are specific functions of the will, must be exercised and strengthened. The nature and intensity of specific emotional energies suggest the best methods of utilizing them. Fundamentally, it is a matter of connecting and relating these energies to the objective to be reached, that is to say, of orientating or channeling the flow of the emotions and feelings towards the predetermined goal. This often requires a transmutation or sublimation of these energies, which in turn involves the will's capacity to engage and direct these energies towards further activities, toward constructive and higher objectives. I have already discussed the subject of transmutation and sublimation of the sexual and combative energies. Here I may add that this process is based on the close reciprocal action between emotions and feelings on one side and desires and drives on the other. Every painful emotion and feeling arouses the desire and urge to eliminate its cause. Conversely, pleasant and happy emotions prompt the perpetuation of what has produced them. The will can take advantage of this fact to orient, direct, and transmute desires and drives. All this is valid, however, only for cases in which the emotions, drives, and desires are not excessively intense and respond more or less rapidly and easily to the action of the will. But at times their intensity is such as to arouse resistance or even state a state of violent rebellion against the direction that the will tries to impart to them. Here the will must employ other methods, for if itself in direct opposition to these energies, then it frequently fails. And even if it does succeed in controlling them by an act of imposition, it arouses conflicts that are wasteful of energy and can have harmful consequences. In these cases, the will's first task is to discharge the intense and excessive tensions of the emotional and propulsive energies. This can be done by means of various ventilating techniques, catharsis, symbolic satisfaction, and if appropriate, a measure of actual gratification. In this way, the will can succeed in eliminating opposition or in reducing it to a lower level of intensity so that the energies can now be used in the manner first mentioned. Naturally, no instrument, no psychic voltmeter exists for measuring the potential of emotional and impulsive charges, but introspection and observation of spontaneous manifestations can give an approximate idea of their intensity. The energy charge of the will itself must also be reckoned with. A weak will has difficulty in directing emotions, even if they are of a low or medium intensity, whereas a strong will can do it successfully. The energy relationship between the will and the resistance offered by the psychological material which the will wants to control, direct, and transform must be given proper consideration. Here, experimentation is useful. The strength of the will can be ascertained by definite exercises and experiments in the use of the techniques of direction, transmutation, and sublimation. There is another psychological function which has close connections to those already mentioned. It is the imagination. Here also there are relationships of reciprocal action and reaction. Emotions and desires evoke images which correspond to them. In their turn, the activities of the imagination arouse emotions, desires, and urges. Great is the power of images, and they can be said to constitute a necessary intermediary between the will and the other psychological functions. The dynamic relations between all these functions have been formulated in some of the laws described in the chapter on the skillful will. The will can learn to direct the imagination to a considerable extent. To achieve this, systematic exercises and training are very helpful. First are exercises in reproductive imagination, using visualization, the evocation of sound, and memories of sensory impressions and the other sense modalities. One then proceeds to exercises in self-directed creative imagination, by starting with a symbol or with an appropriately selected situation. In these exercises, it is the subject's will that substitutes for the therapist, who normally would conduct these exercises in the fashion of de Soil's guided daydream and Loner's guided effective imagery. This is not easy, but it can be done. The techniques of the ideal model and of training the imagination, described in psychosynthesis, are useful not only for their own science-specific purposes, but also for putting the imagination at the behest of and under direction of the will. Let us now see how the will can utilize the mind in directing the execution. It can and must also use the mind in other ways. Where there is a problem to be solved, for which the will has resolved to reach a solution, it focuses the mind's attention on the problem. It examines it, reflects upon it, and formulates hypotheses about possible solutions. These hypotheses may be subsequently put to the test of experiment. This can be called deep thinking or reflective meditation. See Appendix 2, Thinking and Meditation, page 218. Another of the mind's functions, which can and must be directed by the will, is the intuition. This leads to the examination of the relations between will and intuition. It seems evident that the will possesses no direct power over the intuitive function. It can even hamper its functioning. But here also the will can perform a most helpful indirect action. It can create and keep clear the channel of communication along which the intuitive impressions descend. It does this by imposing a temporary check on the distracting activities of the other psychological functions. The will can encourage, not coerce, I repeat, the intuitive operation by formulating questions to be addressed to the superconscious sphere, the seat of the intuition. These questions must be given clear and precise form. The replies may come promptly, but more often they appear after a lapse of time, when least expected. See Appendix 2, page 218. End of chapter 16.